The explosive new film, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, exposes secrets behind the government's takedown of General Michael Flynn.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
He told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire. They had to get rid of Flynn.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.
With Randy Corcoran on News Talk 710 KNUS.
Good morning. Welcome. Welcome to our show. So good to have you along on a good-looking, if chilly, Saturday morning. Cannot believe it's January 11th already. 3 minutes after 9 o'clock. Whippersnappers here behind the glass. Let's keep him busy today. I worked him hard last night and this morning. We've got audio from U.S. Senator Cory Gardner. An excellent speech after the killing of the Iranian terrorist. And we're going to play that in its entirety during this hour. I cut it up into little pieces in case we want to pause, if we get calls, people want to comment. One advantage to not having, always having live guests, but pulling audio from other sources is we can stop and we can weigh in. And of course, we welcome your calls, 303-696-1971, 696-1971. I'm Randy Corcoran, your pumped up purveyor of principled, passionate patriotism, and your unabashed Trump cultist. Don't forget that back in 2016, I was one of the infamous seven Colorado delegates at the Republican National Convention elected to support Ted Cruz for president, who did everything in my power to try and make the Republican Party enforce their own rules at the convention, hear votes, take counts, actually let the delegates count for something instead of simply being an audience to a prescripted show and the coronation then of Donald Trump. I then started working on becoming a reluctant Trump voter, understanding that a vote for anybody other than President Trump was really a vote to hand the presidency to Hillary Clinton. And time went on, and Donald Trump won the election. He wiped out the field. He pulled off really a miracle in the Electoral College. And then he showed up for his inaugural speech and grasped my attention forever. And, you know, Donald Trump isn't perfect. Nobody else is. There are things that I could quibble with over the last 3 years and have from time to time, especially policy disagreements. But the reason I am so happy to refer to myself as a Trump cultist is because in 3 years, this president, certainly not an ideological conservative. Somebody asked me what I believe. I'm a constitutional conservative, and we could spend 3 hours explaining what that means. That is not Donald Trump, but his instincts and his decision making and his commentary and the way he interacts with citizens at his rallies, the love of citizenry, the love of the military and law enforcement. So obvious, so clear in the way that he reveres them and talks about them all the time. And even leading up to the decision to fire the drone and take out General Soleimani, all of those things have simply just I can't even begin to tell you how grateful I am that President Donald Trump has been and will be for the next 5 years president of the United States of America. So when I talk about being a Trump cultist, it's not like, oh, this blind guy who's just caught up in the movement and all the craziness and, No, I have struggled and fought and watched and challenged and learned and listened and read, and this president is unbelievable. I looked at his Twitter feed this morning, and when I started paying attention, he was at about 63 million Twitter followers. Last week, he was at about 69.1, I think, or something like that. Today, January 11th, 2020, the Roaring Twenties, Trump is at 70.6 million Twitter followers. The movement is growing. The followers are growing. And listen, there's plenty of people who follow the president so they can bash everything he does, everything he says. I get that. But you will notice if you tune in to the newly scheduled 9 to noon Wake Up with Randy Corporan that just love, admiration, and respect for this president, I will happily wear it on my sleeve. And I welcome 303-696-1971, people who disagree for whatever reason, even those who are still Republicans, even those who may have reluctantly voted for him the first time as I did and may even vote for him again the second time because, well, look at the alternatives. Things that you want to disagree about, policy, etc., I welcome those calls so we can talk them through. Nobody has been more out in front of this president than Congressman Matt Gaetz from Florida. He's the guy who turned Nancy Pelosi's impeachment hoax on its head when he took a bunch of Freedom Caucus congresspeople for a walk down into the secret basement of the Capitol and exposed to all of the national media what the heck was going on down there. Behind closed doors, out of sight, Adam Schiff deciding which transcripts would be released, which witnesses would be permitted to be called, rarely a Republican witness, which people would be allowed to participate. The president wasn't, his lawyers weren't, not during that stage of the process. Nobody has been a more articulate or a more successful or a more proud supporter of President Donald Trump. And yet Matt Gaetz signed on with Nancy Pelosi and the Democrats to pass a relatively meaningless but politically significant anti-war resolution saying that no American president could take us to war in Iran. Matt Gaetz, Trump cultist, Trump supporter, signed on to that resolution. And man, did he get some flack for it. Watching on Twitter, Gaetz sold us out. The timing is bad. It wasn't politically smart. How could you do that? And so no way for me to get Gaetz on the show. I mean, I'm working on it. It could happen down the road. But right now, within a few days' notice, there's just no way that that happens. So I listened to some of his interviews and took a bunch of audio, short clips, where Matt Gaetz supports himself. And he does it well. He explains why his vote with Nancy Pelosi was supporting the Trump doctrine when it comes to war and was supporting this president 100%. I think you'll find it fascinating. And we'll talk about that and play some of those clips in the 11 o'clock hour. Also at 11 sharp, we're going to be joined by the woman who showed up down here in Aurora, Colorado, when Beto McDork was here after he had announced from the debate stage that damn right we intend to take your guns. And she showed up packing heat at his rally and said, "Oh, hell no, you won't." And she has taken her political enthusiasm and her principles and decided that her congressman, Scott Tipton, on the Western Slope, is just simply not doing the job, is just simply not conservative enough. Now, President Trump has already come out and endorsed Scott Tipton. So it'll be fascinating to talk to Lauren. She wrote a strong letter, strongly worded letter to Scott Tipton. And we'll bring her on for a few minutes in the 11 o'clock to talk about primarying an established Republican, one that's already been supported or endorsed by the President of the United States. What's the thought process behind that? And that really ties into what we're going to do in just a few minutes with this Cory Gardner speech, because Cory Gardner, again, about 8 minutes worth, excellent floor speech, articulating so well. One activist here in Colorado called it Trumpian in the way that he explained American principles, supported the decision of the president, praised the administration for what it did. And so many of my fellow Tea Partiers and constitutional conservative friends and longtime outsiders who try to do work in or influence the Republican Party, have had plenty of disagreements with Cory Gardner. We still get lots of calls down here in spite of the fact that that President Trump has endorsed Cory Gardner, and Cory Gardner votes with the president 90 plus percent of the time and is his go-to guy on Asian policy, and that they talk almost on a weekly basis and on and on and on, that, you know, I just can't hold my nose and vote for Gardner. He's just not a conservative. He sold us out. Establishment Republican, doesn't stand for all that stuff. And so my response to those people is, what is your alternative? You know, we've got Lauren Boebert running against a House, guy, she's been there, what, 3-4 terms now, Scott Tipton. Definitely ran as a staunch conservative, voting record, maybe not as much as we would like, supported by the president. She decides to throw her hat in the ring. Should someone be throwing their hat in the ring against Cory Gardner? You know, my argument so far has been, number one, there's nobody out there. Number two, nobody I could conceive of could really put up a challenge. Number three, the president has endorsed him. Number four, incumbents almost, you know, they have a 90-plus percent chance of winning their reelection efforts. Both sides of the aisle, that holds true. And so when we're heading into such tumultuous times, when the Trump economy is on such a roll, when Trump has taken decisive action to reestablish American dominance on the world stage, militarily, policy-wise, deals with Canada and Mexico, deals with China, all of those kinds of things, is this a year to be throwing in against, you know, behind primary opponents and against incumbents when they have that 90% chance of being reelected, in large part just because they're the incumbents, have the money, have the name recognition, have the machinery in place, all of those things. And so, you know, what Lauren is doing with Scott Tipton really fits well with the arguments we have on this show and elsewhere. I hear them all the time regarding Cory Gardner. When you hear this speech from Cory Gardner, which we'll do here in about 5 minutes, I think you will be personally just and individually highly, highly impressed. And maybe it'll help quiet some of the concerns about, you know, Trump is running from, or Gardner's running from Trump. Gardner will never talk about the president. Simply not the case, as you will soon hear. A couple of things I want to do before we get to our first break. And we're going to play some short audio from President Donald Trump from his announcement speech when he came down the escalator. Do you remember all the pomp and circumstances at the beautiful Trump Hotel in New York, Trump Tower, and Melania leading the way and packed house, just a packed house. And of course, I watched this speech many times after he delivered it, just again, trying to wrap my head around. Remember now, I'm running as a Ted Cruz delegate and elected as a Ted Cruz delegate and had planned to be a Ted Cruz delegate. I know Ted Cruz. I've spent time with him, with his father. I'm just so impressed about so many things about him. And no, I do not think he would have beaten Hillary Clinton. So that's another reason I'm grateful for Donald Trump. But this speech hit a lot of high notes with me the very first after the escalator speech from Donald Trump announcing his candidacy. And I just, I don't know, yesterday I thought, man, I want to hear that again. What did he say then, and how is that all playing out now? And you will be so pleasantly surprised and impressed. We'll get to some of that audio here in just a couple of seconds. Of course, we lost a couple of heroes today in Afghanistan. That fits into the big picture about war strategy, all the troops that saddled up to go over when there was a threat of war with Iran seems to have stopped them. They're so incompetent over there. They shot down a Ukrainian plane. They finally admitted it after the day before saying it was impossible and that it was ridiculous to even consider that that could happen. Of course, they're blaming it on Trump. Literally, the Iranian Ayatollah blaming their shooting down a passenger plane with a rocket on the president of the United States because a day before we had taken out their top general, top terrorist in the world. Just crazy, crazy times. But in the midst of all of this, there's such a great discussion to be had about, and this will really play in when we listen to Matt Gaetz in the 11 o'clock hour too. about whether we should be continuing to have a presence over there in Iraq and in the Middle East, any of these places over there in the sandy nether regions of the Middle East. And I don't think it's as cut and dried as some people like to make it. You know, Rand Paul, certain radio hosts, bring them home. Just protect our border. Be ready to go to war if we're attacked. But get the hell out of there. I don't think it's that simple. So all of those things are going to be on the table. Before we hear some of this Trump sound, let me just tell you a couple things. The Iowa caucuses, Monday, February 3rd, 23 days away, only 3 weeks and 2 days away. And look at this lineup now. Number one in polling, Sanders, 25%. Pocahontas, 20%, I believe. Buttigieg is right around 18 or 20. Biden, bringing up the rear, now down to 15%. And just think about who these folks are. Except for the young, failed homosexual mayor from Indiana. And I say failed because his city's not doing well. He's articulate. He's smart. He served the country. I respect him for that. But everybody else are old, rich, white people. Sanders and Biden and Pocahontas, along with Buttigieg, the top four on the Democrat Party of Diversity. It's absolutely unbelievable to me that that is the best that the Democrats have. And when we come back on the other side, we'll talk a little bit about the economic situation, the job report. All of those things are out of this world. But I just want you to kick back for a minute, take another sip off of your coffee or pour another cup, and let's spend a couple of minutes with Donald J. Trump right after he came down the escalator to announce his candidacy for the president of the United States.
Wow. Whoa. That is some group of people. Thousands. So nice. Thank you very much. That's really nice. Thank you. It's great to be at Trump Tower. It's great to be in a wonderful city, New York. And it's an honor to have everybody here. This is beyond anybody's expectations. There's been no crowd like this. And I can tell you, some of the candidates, they went in, they didn't know the air conditioner didn't work. They sweated like dogs. They didn't know the room was too big because they didn't have anybody there. How are they going to beat ISIS? I don't think it's going to happen.
That is 43 seconds into the speech. It's masterful. So smooth, so powerful. Connecting in so many ways to one of the most important things on everybody's mind, especially those of us who do not want our men and women of the military in harm's way over in the Middle East, but still understand that ISIS exists, Al-Qaeda exists, and of course, Trump hadn't had his way with ISIS yet at that time. But the very first thing, very first topic, is he went down the list and identified the feckless Democrats. Oh, and actually, take it back. He identified the feckless Republican opponents for the presidency, 1, 2, 3, 4, and tied them right into how in God's name are they going to beat ISIS. President, then candidate Trump continued.
Our country is in serious trouble. We don't have victories anymore. We used to have victories, but we don't have them. When was the last time anybody saw us beating, let's say, China in a trade deal? They kill us. I beat China all the time. All the time. When did we beat Japan at anything? They send their cars over by the millions. And what do? When was the last time you saw a Chevrolet in Tokyo? It doesn't exist, folks. They beat us all the time. When do we beat Mexico at the border? They're laughing at us, at our stupidity. And now they're beating us economically. They are not our friend, believe me. But they're killing us economically.
China, Mexico, trade. ISIS, number one. Trade, number two. We're not even 2 minutes into the opening of Donald Trump's candidacy announcement speech after he came down the elevator. And we're not going to play a ton of this, only a couple more clips probably. I think we'll go ahead and do them on the other side. But in retrospect, this was not some fumbling, bragging, spotlight-grabbing, media-savvy, celebrity trying to worm his way into power or anything else. Just seems like every syllable, maybe not the inhaling through the nose. I'd love to teach Donald Trump, just open your mouth and breathe through your mouth instead of your nose. You won't have that problem. But, wait a minute. And anyway, every word was well crafted. It was absolutely extraordinary. We'll play a couple of those cuts on the other side, get you the Cory Gardner speech in its entirety. May bring some folks around who continue to be resistant against Gardner in spite of no viable competition, Trump support, the importance of the 2020 elections, Senate, House majorities, all of it. We'll do all those things when we come back on the other side. Forgot to mention at 10 o'clock, we'll spend some time conversation with Rob Nadelson, the constitutional scholar, talking about impeachment. When I scheduled that interview, I really thought that the articles of impeachment would be in the hands of the Senate, and we could ask him more about what's happening and what's going forward. But it also turned into a good opportunity to kind of recap what happened before Christmas, where we stand right now, and then to look ahead. So all of that's coming up, so long as you stay right there. It's Wake Up with Randy Corporan at 710 KNUS.
Now, back to Wake Up with Randy Corporan on News Talk 710 KNUS.
Little tribute to Rush. Not Rush Limbaugh, you old fogies. Rock band Rush lost their drummer. Neil Peart died on Tuesday. 62, was he? 67 years old. Anyway, thought we'd just give a little bit of thank you. We were playing some audio from now President Donald J. Trump during his announcement speech, when he first announced that he was running for president. And it's just so amazing. First thing out of the gate, 44 seconds in, he talks about his opponents in the Republican primary not being competent enough to deal with ISIS. And of course, we know ISIS is, for all intents and purposes, gone. Not that that pieces can't spring up under the same name, new name, same flag, new flag, but just mass destruction on ISIS during the presidency of Donald Trump. And then in the second clip, and all this was done within the first 2 minutes of the speech, he identified China and Mexico and all of the trade problems and how stupid America has been when it comes to making trade deals. And so, you know, it was all pomp and circumstances and the first real exposure to Trump as a serious, or people weren't even taking him that seriously then, but he was certainly announcing his serious intention to become president of the United States. And so it's interesting to go back and in retrospect now hear some of that language, some of those words. But I'll tell you what, and Peter asked this question on his show this week, did President Donald Trump win the election with the actions he took and then the comment he made the next day after taking out Soleimani, the number one terrorist in the world? You remember this? Did you hear it yourself?
As long as I'm president of the United States, Iran will never be allowed to have a nuclear weapon. Iran must abandon its nuclear ambitions.
Yeah.
And its
anyway, that's cut up a little bit after that, but and I didn't think it jumped like it just did, because what I wanted you to get out of that is, after he made that statement, so long as I'm president of the United States, Iran will never have a nuclear weapon, then he said good morning and launched into his speech. And I wondered if that was one of those, you know, Ronald Reagan Brandenburg wall moments where they kept taking out Gorbachev, tear down this wall, They kept scratching that out of Reagan's speeches, and Reagan kept writing it back in. And even on the way, on the drive, if you've read any of the biographies or the histories about Ronald Reagan, he wrote it back in again. It was in his heart. He was going to do it. And I wonder if that was one of those moments from President Donald Trump. Really an impactful week for the president. He's made the Democrats now come out in favor of Iran and a nasty, highly revered terrorist, murderer of Americans, wounder of Americans, and so many others, massacrer of his own people if they dared to stand up against the regime over there. And Donald Trump, it's so brilliant how he plays these guys, the things he has forced them to come down in favor of in order to oppose him. Before we play the last couple of just pretty short clips of the Trump introductory speech, I wanted you to remember back 3 years ago and just think about how much has already come true. What did he warn about? What did he say about it? What did he say or imply he would do about it? And what has he done during the first 3 years in spite of unprecedented pushback, attacks, lies, investigations, the press aligned, the Democrats aligned, but not in an honest policy dispute way, in a dishonest and aggressive and propaganda method way. It's incredible that he just drives the Trump train forward in spite of all of it. And, you know, the proof is in the pudding. Once again, December, 145,000 new jobs added. That will probably be revised upward. The initial numbers that they come out are usually advised, and given what's been going on, these will probably go up. But unemployment remains at 3.5% all across the United States. The 50-year low of American unemployment continues. And that includes, and especially applies to the black community, Latinos, women. 50% of the jobs in America are held by women now, with Hispanic women leading the way. And, you know, I had a dinner with a good friend of mine, a federal law enforcement agent for his entire career, voted for Trump, could not be more never Trump, anti-Trump now, in part, I'm sure, because Trump is called out and is exposing what's really the corruption and the bureaucratic lack of forethought and believing that they're the elected people who are in control of foreign policy and American policy and all of those things. And when I brought up those economic numbers during this dinner, during this anti-Never Trump diatribe from a former Trump voter, I'm told, well, you got to look at the number. The trend started under the Obama administration. Look at where we were and look where Obama got us to. And Trump just carried that on. And it's just so specious to make that argument, because even Barack Obama, near the end of his presidency, was talking about, you know, we have to get used to these numbers now. Those manufacturing jobs are gone. And you know, what's Donald Trump going to do? He talks about bringing back manufacturing. He's going to wave a magic wand. Even then President of the United States, Barack Hussein Obama, much like Jimmy Carter tried to do before the massive two-term elections of Ronald Reagan, tried to get America used to malaise, used to having to put on sweaters instead of turning up your furnace, used to have to wait in lines for gasoline, push your car up because it runs out of gas while you're waiting in that gas line. 18% interest rates on mortgage loans. Those two presidents were trying to get America accommodated to a lethargic and costly America. And this president said, oh, hell to the no. I know what works. I know how to bring those jobs back. I have Barack Obama's magic wand. And I'm going to wave it, and I'm going to use it. But this is what you get from, of course, from the left, but also from the folks who just think Donald Trump is just too rude. He's just too crass. He's just too direct. He's just too impetuous, which, of course, time after time we see is not the case. And it's very frustrating, but they are a minority of a minority, as the Trump cult and the support for this president continues to grow. What was it that Trump tweeted this morning? I think I've got it here someplace. Well, maybe not. But I remember it was 95% approval in the Republican Party. That's unprecedented. That's unheard of. 53 or 54% approval rating now, much higher than Barack Obama was at this time in his presidency, and on and on and on. And just to wrap up these economic numbers, and then we'll hear the last couple of clips from Donald Trump. $28.32 per hour average wage is up 2.9, almost 3% since December of 2018. And here's what really matters about that. It's the lower wage earners. And I try. It's hard. I try not to ever say the low class, the middle class, the upper class, because we're not a class society. Steve Jobs was building computer boards in his garage. And though he's left the earth, his company is now the richest company in the history of the world, worth over $1 trillion in market share, in stock market valuation. So forget classes, stop using it, but lower income, lower wage earners are making up the gap, the wage gap, faster than those in the upper echelons of wage earnings. They're by percentage, their wages are increasing much, much faster. And then, of course, I'll hear, oh, well, yeah, but the billionaires and the millionaires and the billionaires have all the money. Forget about them. It doesn't matter how much money they have. They can have $1 trillion under their mattress, and it does not stop you from earning your living or creating your business or your service and becoming as successful as you can be, because it is not a limited pot of money. So forget about the Democrat arguments of wage inequality and the top controls all the wealth. It doesn't matter, because it's not a limited supply of wealth. I say that a lot, but it's very, very important. 200,000 people came back to the labor force in December. One of the ways Obama kept his unemployment numbers from being so high was they stopped counting. You remember this? They stopped counting people who dropped out of the workforce. So it skewed the numbers and made unemployment rates under Obama not look quite so bad. So much gamesmanship going on. Of course, the Dow hit a record, topped 29,000 for the first time this week. So all of those great things are happening under President Donald Trump. We will do the Cory Gardner speech on the other side of this break, but let me give you just these last couple of minutes of candidate Donald Trump, after coming down the escalator, was talking about his reasons for vying for the nomination for President of the United States. Remember, first 40 seconds, ISIS, my opponents can't handle them. Before 2 minutes were up into this speech, ISIS, and then trade, China, Mexico. It was just boom, 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 and Donald Trump continued.
The U.S. has become a dumping ground for everybody else's problems. Thank you. It's true. And these are the best and the finest. When Mexico sends its people, they're not sending their best. They're not sending you. They're not sending you. They're sending people that have lots of problems, and they're bringing those problems with us. They're bringing drugs. They're bringing crime. They're rapists. And some, I assume, are good people. But I speak to border guards, and they tell us what we're getting. And it only makes common sense. It only makes common sense. They're sending us not the right people. It's coming from more than Mexico. It's coming from all over South and Latin America, and it's coming probably from the Middle East. But we don't know, because we have no protection and we have no competence. We don't know what's happening. And it's got to stop. And it's got to stop fast.
So we're now, 2.5 minutes, just under 3 minutes into the Trump introductory speech. And he's already hit ISIS. He's hit trade, China, Mexico, and then he's hit immigration. And you remember the flack he took when he said that people crossing over the border from Mexico, they're sending us criminals and rapists. Oh, my God, he's xenophobic. And that was the first thing that was going to make Trump a non-viable candidate. You step back now over the last 3 years as Trump has fought and fought and fought to get this border under control. Every time a single judge signs an order, an injunction, stopping the executive from implementing its legal authority and its policy, Trump has to go through the courts and get a higher court ruling and inevitably wins, just like he got $3 more billion released to start building his wall, continue building the wall just this week. But it didn't stop him. And if you look at the statistics, if you actually step back and look at the news that is rarely very well covered in the mainstream media, rapists and criminals, lots of them in our country because Barack Hussein Obama and his predecessors could have cared less about keeping a sovereign border on our southern side. So another way that this president was just so prescient, and it's no wonder that the American people bought into it. And now, this is why this election is going to be massive in November. Unless something drastically changes, it's going to be massive. Because now people who liked what they heard now like what they've seen. And they know that a second term with a Republican control of the House and the Senate will allow this to flourish and grow. And man, we got to get while the getting's good. So we're going to take our break right now. We'll hear the last segment that I recorded from this Trump speech, and then we'll transition into Cory Gardner. You will love the, as one activist from Colorado referred to it, Trumpian speech that Cory Gardner gave on the floor of the Senate just a couple of days ago, last Thursday. We'll get to all of that next. You stay right there on Wake Up with Randy Corporan here at 710 KNUS.
Now, back to Wake Up with Randy Corporan on News Talk 710 KNUS.
We're back at 947, bright sunny day here in beautiful Denver, Colorado. Highs today only around 42 or so, however. But still warm enough and nice enough to show up on the west steps of the Capitol today. Pro-life rally at 1 and a march that begins at 2. I'll give you some more details about that in just a little bit. To callers on the line, sorry we haven't had time for your calls. One had a question about the unemployment tax, and just real quick, like to service the callers. Federal Unemployment Tax Act was started in 1939. There was a revision to it, a new one done June 30th, 2011. Not sure what you needed about that, but there you go. I aim to please. And because we've got limited time in this final segment, and next hour we're going to spend a good chunk of time with legal scholar Rob Nadelson, I'm going to save the last couple of minutes that I had selected from the Trump speech, the announcement speech when he announced his decision to run, for probably sometime in the 11 o'clock hour, because I want you to hear all of Cory Gardner's 8-minute speech on the floor of the Senate after Trump took out the terrorist and Trump made his remarks about Iran, as long as I'm president, we'll never have a nuclear weapon. Senator Gardner was simply fantastic.
Thank you, Madam President. I come to the floor today to speak about United States policy toward the Islamic Republic of Iran. I commend the administration for taking decisive action last week in Baghdad against Iran-backed terrorists planning an imminent attack on American targets. The administration's action with regard to Qasem Soleimani was not only decisive, but was necessary and legal under long-standing presidential authority to protect American lives from imminent attack. It is our obligation, it is our duty to protect American lives, especially when our national security agencies and personnel know the imminent danger of attack. The president made the right call at the right time to neutralize the threat and to save American lives. Imagine having done nothing and allowing the attacks to proceed. And that is exactly what happened. At yesterday's classified briefing, General Milley and our national security personnel made it clear the death of General Soleimani saved lives. Our duty in Congress is to protect the United States, its people and interests, diplomats, and our men and women in uniform around the globe. The actions taken by our military in Iraq undoubtedly saved American lives and addressed a clear, compelling, and unambiguous threat. The world should not mourn Qasem Soleimani, a man whose name is synonymous with murder in the Middle East, as the head of the Islamic Revolutionary Guard Corps, Quds Force, which is designated as a terrorist organization under U.S. law, a man who personally is designated as a terrorist battlefield commander by President Obama. The Quds Force was the tip of the spear for the regime in its terrorist activities abroad and is responsible for thousands of deaths across the region. And most importantly, according to the Pentagon, Soleimani was responsible for the deaths of over 600 American service members in Iraq. General David Petraeus, who commanded our forces in Iraq, stated last week that, in his opinion, taking out Soleimani was bigger than bin Laden, bigger than Baghdadi. In other words, President Trump rid the world of an extreme and lethal American enemy, enemy of the American people, someone who was actively pursuing and had killed and taken American lives.
I just want to point out to the Gardner detractors, one of whom I have been a part of for many, many years over the years, but changing my tune for the 2020 election, that Cory Gardner actually used and invoked the name of President Donald J. Trump. He continued on the floor of the Senate.
I fail to understand how anyone can question this decision or its rationale. And I know they certainly did not, and rightfully so, when President Obama took out bin Laden. We expected an Iranian response, and on Tuesday, Iran launched a ballistic missile attack against bases in Iraq hosting U.S. troops. I condemn these attacks in the strongest terms, and we are fortunate that they did not result in any casualties. I do not want war with Iran, but the president did not take this action in a vacuum. Contrary to claims by some of my colleagues in this very chamber, it is Iran that has escalated tensions, not the United States. Over the last several months and years, Iran has sharply escalated its malign behavior against the United States and our allies. On June 13th, the IRGC attacked two oil tankers in the Strait of Hormuz, a critical global shipping lane. On June 20th, the IRGC shot down a U.S. unmanned aerial vehicle in international space. On September 14th, Iran sponsored an attack on Saudi Arabia's oil facilities, temporarily cutting off half of the oil supply of the world's largest producer. On December 27th, Iranian proxy group Kataib Hezbollah carried out a deadly attack against a base in northern Iraq, killing an American civilian, killing an American. The administration appropriately retaliated against this group on December 29th. Then on New Year's Eve, Iran-backed militias besieged and damaged the U.S. embassy in Baghdad for 2 days, forcing the administration to take prudent measures to prevent further violence. When Soleimani was caught plotting additional attacks against American targets, the administration took lawful and appropriate action. Now, I now urge Tehran to take the opportunity presented by the administration to de-escalate tensions immediately. The administration must also continue taking all necessary steps to keep our troops, diplomats, and country safe, and to regularly consult with Congress on next steps.
Very effective how Senator Cory Gardner listed some of the deaths and attacks caused by Soleimani, and also brought up the fact that there was certainly intelligence to demonstrate that there was much, much more to come.
It is my hope that diplomacy ultimately prevails, but we must not repeat the mistakes of the past. Iran's enmity toward the United States stretches over decades, not just months or weeks. Following the Islamic Revolution in Iran in 1979, the ruling mullahs held 52 American diplomats hostage for 444 days, releasing them only on January 20th, 1981, the day President Ronald Reagan was sworn into office. 2 years later, on April 18th, 1983, a truck laden with explosives rammed into the U.S. Embassy in Beirut, Lebanon, killing 17 Americans. On October 23, 1983, a similar attack on the U.S. Marine barracks in Beirut killed 241 American servicemen. Overwhelmingly, the evidence led to Iran and its wholly owned subsidiary, Hezbollah, as the perpetrator of these attacks. The Iranian regime has not changed in 40 years. It targeted and killed Americans during the Iraq War, supported Shiite militias, and supplied deadly explosives used to target our troops. Iran continues to prop up the regime of the murderous Bashar al-Assad in Syria. The Iranian regime regularly refers to the United States as the Great Satan and threatens our ally, Israel, which they call Little Satan, to wipe them off the face of the earth. The mullahs continue to grossly abuse the human rights of their own people, as demonstrated by recent bloody crackdowns on protesters in Iran that have claimed hundreds and hundreds of innocent lives.
You'd think at some point I'll learn how to manage the clock a little better. We've got about 2 minutes left of the Cory Gardner speech. Need to take our top of the hour pause here right now, so we will finish that before we talk with Rob Nadelson about impeachment, looking back and looking forward in the 10 o'clock hour. My apologies to the callers on the line. I've just had too much to play and to talk to you about right now. We will certainly try and do some calls in the 11 o'clock hour, and maybe we can squeeze some in the next hour as well. But right now, let's take our pause. We'll wrap up with Cory Gardner's floor speech on the Senate after the Iran terrorist takedown, and then weigh in with Rob Nadelson, constitutional scholar from the Independence Institute, cited by the U.S. Supreme Court on numerous occasions, not a Trump fan or voter, but a very strong perspective on what's happening with impeachment and what we can look forward to. So lots of reasons to stick around for hour two. Randy Corcoran here at 710 KNUS.